So today we are beginning Perek Yud, which is Os Ches, which he has the topic of Chinuch. So this is all about educating children. And as Reb Chaim always does in the Sefer, he is not trying to address any particular topic in an exhaustive way. It's just what he thinks are important points that need to be made for our generation. So take a look at what he says over here. There are people in our days, in our times, they think that it's absolutely prohibited to patch a child, to touch a child. Now, touch or gaze into touch, he means to discipline them in any physical way. He thinks that there are people that say it's a terrible usher to do. They have to come to the conclusions on their own, and we cannot compel them. And of course, we should not hit them. And they therefore give them everything that they want. This is not the correct way according to the Torah. And even though that it is correct that a person should never frequently hit a child, it should only be at very rare times, distant from each other. Shimlei kein, because if that's not the case, ma'amid b'zeh kol b'hashpah shel hamakos, you lose the entire impact and effect of these types of patches. V'lo shelo yasum klal, but certainly it doesn't mean that a person should never discipline children. So he uses the word liyasrum, which we're going to translate as to discipline, but I just want to point something out that Yisurin, which is sort of like psychological sufferings, if you will, and some say that actually is the sherosh of the word musar, and the basic gist of it is to create tension. That whenever, let's say, we're having a conversation with someone and they disagree with us, or they say something that is not what we were thinking, not what we might want to hear, so all of that is a certain form of yisurin. Because the idea is that when a person thinks something and a person's going on his merry way, and a person says, you know, I don't agree with you. So that creates a certain tension. And that tension is uncomfortable and requires a resolution. And that's the very beginning of discipline, is that when parents say, you know, let's think about this. That's the beginning of it. We're not just going to accept everything that you do because that's what you did. But rather, that's not so simple. And so that's the beginning of discipline. For Amar Yishalmi, Yishalmi already says, Amar B'Simoin, Ilan Ishaya Damrin, Elayna Ov, Banan Liknishta, those ladies that say, we're not going to bring our children to the shuls or to the schools, to the place of gatherings, Ein Chamilei Melach, Melachu. And he translates it, he says, Elu Anashim, these women that say, Lo Nachriach Banenu, Likanes Aves HaMerdish, we're not going to force our children, our sons, to go to the Beis Medrash. If he's the type of person that should be learning, he'll do it on its own. They're not doing the right thing. If they cause him tension, discipline, and they compel him forcefully to go learn, Kadosh Baruch Hu will teach him, and he will learn to learn. It's interesting. This whole piece, you know, begs a very important question, certainly Bizman Azeh, but at all times, which is what is the role that compulsion plays in Chinuch? So I just want to point one thing out that I think is correct, and this is not Reb Chaim. I'm just saying this on my own, that if you take a look at the word Chinuch as it comes up in the Torah, and it's interesting because we're now approaching the topics of Mishkan in Parshas HaShavua. So the word Chinuch comes up there relative to Kalim in the Mishkan as well. How are you machanech a kli? And so Rashi says that Tchilas Hachnasasai, the beginning of bringing this item into the job that it will eventually do on a regular basis, that's what's called Chinuch. In other words, using it for what it's supposed to be used for is Chinuch. What does that mean? And how does that translate into what we call education? So I learned this, so to speak, the hard way, that we might imagine, and that's what Ruch Chaim is saying in the beginning here, that children will come to the conclusions on their own. They will develop ideas. Maybe they're thoughtful, thinking people. And certainly there are different types of children, more precocious than others, smarter than others, more philosophical than others. And they're all different kinds of people, and they're all kinds of different kinds of children. But what the common denominator is that what chinuch means in its definition of the word is that you get something prepared now, you get it rolling, you get it in a routine for what it's going to necessarily have to do. You get it in a routine for what it's necessarily going to have to do. So that means that what chinuch means is that when children are not necessarily old enough to fully understand what they're doing, you get them doing it. So if they go to shul, every day you go to shul. Every day you have to learn a little bit. Every day you have to do this. Every day, every day, every day. It becomes a routine. It becomes something they do. If you're talking about girls. So if you're waiting until a girl becomes bas mitzvah to tell her that she has to cover her elbows and her knees, so that you're going to be in big trouble. But if this is the way that she was raised from the time that she was three, that everything that she wears covers her elbows and her knees, and that's the way that we dress. So that becomes something that it's always the way that it's been. And now when it becomes time that it's actually a chiyuv because she's a bas mitzvah, it comes for a boy, it's time to start davening in a minyan, and he's a bar mitzvah. So he was already doing that because of his chinuch. So chinuch really means, according to Rashi, the Pashto definition of the word is before it's obligated to do this thing, you get this object in the routine of doing it so that when it comes time to use it for that, it's ready to go. So that's what he's relating to over here as well, is that if you want to have a child do something, so yeah, there's a compulsion. There's a compulsion before the child is obligated to do it. You go to yeshiva. That's what we do. And you get used to doing these types of things. It becomes a routine of a person. And that's called chinuch. And then that it doesn't leave him as he gets older. If a person withholds the rod, he hates his son. But and the one that loves his son, so he is the one that gives him Musar. And the word Shichara is also very interesting, like Shachar, gives him the light of Musar in the morning. Anyway, be that as it may. So this is a pasuk in Mishlei from Shlomo HaMelech. And the kasha on the pasuk is, how can you say that if a person doesn't hit his son, he hates his son? It's not pshat, he hates his son at all. The pshat is that he loves his son. He loves his son so much that he can't bring himself to discipline him. Isn't that true? Pirush Rashi, chayseich shivta, if a person withholds, like the word chayseich, right? It's interesting, chayseich and shachar. Chayseich shivta, if a person withholds the rod, in the end, that's what Rashi says, in the end, he's going to hate his son. Where it's coming from now is certainly not hate. Certainly not. But what it means is that soinei benoi, Rashi says it means that he's going to end up hating him. Why is that true? Because in the end, what he's going to see is that he's going to see him go out and have bad friends and be involved with bad people and do bad things. You think, again, the Medrash is asking the same kasha. You think anybody hates his son? That since he is not giving him Musar, he's not creating the tension, he's not disciplining him. Words of Chachman, words of just the way the world works, he is called a hater, Nikra Soinei. She called me Shemaychiach Espenoi, Allah Chachma Derech Eretz, who Nikra Oy Havoi, whoever gives Musar to his son in a smart way and about wisdom and with Derech Eretz and about Derech Eretz. So he is called a lover of his son, Shenemar Oy Havoi, Shechar Musar, like the Pasuk says. He's going to end up loving him because he'll end up on the right path. Rishmois Rabba Parsh, Al Chais of Shiv, the son of Benoi, that a person that if a person prevents, he's holding back his son from giving him any discipline, so then at the end he's going to end up in bad chevra, he's going to end up hating him. That Avraham Avinu loved Yishmael so much. Shahaya Mispanic, he did not give him Musar. And he ended up hating him because he ended up doing terrible things. And he ended up sending him out of his house empty-handed. What happened to him in the end when he exiled him from his home? He ended up sitting at a crossroads and becoming Kimata bandit. success, and he's going to end up being a wild man. Similarly, yeah, Yitzchak had a loving relationship with Esav. And he ended up getting involved in all kinds of terrible things because, again, he didn't give him the proper Musar. You know, we can't say these things, but that's what he's quoting from Chazal. Like he says about Esav, that he did these five terrible averus that day. Not only that, but he actually wanted to kill his own father, and he wanted to kill his brother. He wanted his father to die, is really the correct translation. He wasn't going to kill his father, but he would have been happy had he died. He wanted to kill his brother. By David HaMelech, he created a rebellion against his father because he didn't give him Musar when he was younger, didn't discipline him properly, and he ended up doing terrible things. He wanted to kill his father, and he even slept with his father's concubines, and he caused him to end up having to walk barefoot. And there was a big, there was a lot of people that died as a result of this civil war. And similarly, David HaMelech did not give the proper discipline to Adoniah. And then he ended up not Ligar, but he didn't scream at him, didn't discipline him. Same thing. But all as long as a person does give his son discipline, so you'd think that would create a terrible relationship. And that's the interesting psychology here as well, is that it's not true that if a person lovingly disciplines his children, that they are going to rebel and hate their parents. That's not true. It's the opposite. It's that the children at some point, when they realize that their parents didn't educate them and didn't discipline them, and now they end up in a place where they have to figure out all kinds of things on their own, they really do not appreciate their parents. But the way that it really works is that when a person lovingly disciplines their children, and it's clear that they have their children's best interest in mind, and the children hopefully to some extent should be able to see that, then there is a greater ahava that the children have for their parents, and they give them kavod. Shinemar yaser bincha v'nichecha. V'emer yaser bincha ki yesh tikva u'maisif alav ahava. Shinemar v'oyve shekar musar. And it'll end up being a greater love from the parent to the child as well. That Avram Avinu did give discipline to Yitzhak, his son, and he taught him Torah, and he guided him in the proper path. When he was 37 years old, that when his father did Akedas Yitzhak, when Yitzhak was 37, and he was old, and he tied him up like a sheep, and he didn't stop him, didn't protest. So Avram loved Yitzhak because of the way that he responded to all of this, and he gave him everything. Similarly, that was where Yitzhak gave Musar to Yaakov Avinu as well. He taught him Torah, he gave him Musar in the Beis Medrash. So he was a bracha, and he inherited. He was the continuity of the Avos, and he inherited Eretz Yisrael. Yaakov Avinu also gave Musar to his children and taught them the proper path. There was no one that was left out of Klal Yisrael. That they were all on the level of tzaddikim. Ah, you're going to say, what do you mean with the whole story of the brothers, Mechir Yosef, and all of these things? So again, that's all the parsha that has to be understood correctly, but that's not the topic over here. But Chazal are saying that you shouldn't think that the Shvatim were terrible, normal people, but rather that what was going on with Michiras Yosef was a totally different idea that had to do with Tzadikim debating over the future of Yosef and what he was doing, and was it good or was it bad? Was he a Roidef or not, based on his Mahalach? In any case, Yaser Ben Chagiyesh Tegwa Ve'el Hamisa Yatisa Nafshecha. He translates this, Ve'al Takeo Yaser Midai, you should never hit him too much. Sheyachal Hamusal Yadeza, you could kill him that way. In, you know, both physically and psychologically. The Medrash says, as we know, that the Torah is acquired in 48 ways, with 48 things, 40 midos. And we ask him in the Talmud Torah, and one of them is that he gives discipline to a son when in terms of learning. That's what gives him a hope and an end. He's going to end up in the right place. And Amar, Yasser Minchak, Yash Tikva, Ba'amr, Yishmael, Yisrael, Bidivri, Terry, Kedei, Shatati Leu, Medina, Shal Gehenim, Lassi Lavai, that when a person gives the proper Musar and discipline when it comes to learning Torah, so that's going to save him from the judgment of Gehenim in the future. What's typically the way that a child starts out is with all kinds of of evil, bad, ridiculousness, and that's what's tied to his heart. But Shevet Musar, when he's given the rod of Musar, so then that is going to distance all of the shtus from him. That the Shevet of the Torah is what's going to remove all of these things from him and allow him to be in the right place. If a person merits this rod of Musar, he tells that it's good, Malchus Bezdin, he's going to end up with a different type of rod, which is going to be the rod of Bezdin when he gets Malchus. Who the Amar Misala Hakima Bermiza Lishataya Beegreif, which means, hold on a second, train him according to his way. That's the next passage, right before this. The wise man, a hint will suffice, but for the fool, one need to use a fist. Zacha Adam, a person, Zaycha Reshid Shal Torah, he'll be Zaycha to the rod of Torah, as his education, V'im Lav, Reshid and Malchus will end up with getting Malchus from Bezdin. Maksiv Chanuch Nochli Darkoi, right, the famous pasuk, that educate a youth, the youth, Al Pi Darkoi, according to his pathway, and then when he gets old, they won't leave him. Al-Bag explains the pasuk. That when you educate your child, what's his way? That you should never try to get out of him or make him do something that is more than his capability, his capacity, because then he's going to feel like a failure. We're educating a child that to the extent that he is a youth in the words of Torah, so he'll be raised with those words of Torah and he will go. When he gets older, so this won't leave him. Just like an eagle, this little shore, the lo yalfa radia miskashia ala b'sayfa. So Shalolam Dua the Harish, they didn't train it to plow when it was younger. When they tried to train it when it's older, it was very difficult to get it to do it. The karma anaf shall gefen, like you have this branch, what do you call it? The vine, the whatever the right word is, this the grapevine. And in Lesat Kafif, Yaseyadihiritiva, Rikasha Yadiachala, that when it's very young and it's you can bend it easily, so you can do things with it, but when you wait until it's hardened, so then it's very difficult. If you don't bend it in the place that you want it to grow when it's moist, so then afterwards, when it becomes very hard, it's very difficult to do anything with it. Don't withhold from a nar musar. It's kind of a shame with leyamus. At the same time, you shouldn't hit it with a rod so that it shouldn't die. That when you hit with the rod, so you are saving its soul from Gehenna. So he says here, the rod and the rebuke provide wisdom, but a self-indulgent youth brings shame to his mother. They also don't quote the Rashi. Okay, apparently they're supposed to look up the Rashi, but it's not quoted here. Okay, Yerusham, Yerim Lemuel, Melech Masa Asher Yisarta Yimoy, Ma Bari Ma Bar Bitni. That the words of Lemuel the king, which is a reference to Shlomo HaMelech, the prophecy with which his mother disciplined him. So what is that? What is it, my son? And what is it, O son of my womb? It teaches us that she binded him to the post, like she was gonna give him Malchus. And she said to him, Mabri, Mabar bitni, that what are you doing, my son, the one that came from my womb, I and jump. I guess she didn't actually hit him, but she gave him the discipline as if he would, and I guess it was sufficient. That you should give Musar to your son, and then leave him to go. You'll be good, and then that'll yitain madanim, and that is how you give nachas, pleasure to your soul. That even if you have a child who is learned, mitzvah nimchayi, nonetheless, there's still a mitzvah to have discipline. Even if he's learning well, there should still be an element of tension of discipline so that it creates a certain yira, and he's not just doing everything that he wants to do. This happens to be an interesting point here, which is that what happens if you have a child that really is, a good kid? So then, discipline is obviously unnecessary. He's saying that's not exactly true, is that there should always be a certain degree of discipline because that's how a person gets in touch with his yira shamayim. So even though, of course, it's not going to be like you can't make something up, but the point is when there's an opportunity for some sort of education, that it should definitely be taken advantage of in a way to create some sort of discipline, some sort of tension, that a person learns how to deal with that and integrate it. There's an incident with a person that was with his child in shul. Everyone else was answering amen and all the correct things, haluka, like in halal. They're answering correctly to their shaliach tzibur. And the kid was like saying, ridiculous things in shul. And the father didn't say anything to discipline him. Everyone was telling him, say something to your kid. It's not acceptable. And he said to them, Masa, what do you want? Tina, who is a kid? He said, let him play. So this continued. He did the same thing the next day. So the whole chag, the kid was saying ridiculous things. The father didn't want to say anything to him. It didn't take too long until his wife died, his children died, his grandson died. There were 15 people in his household that died. All he was left with was two sons, Echad Chigir of Asuma. One was a blind, lame child, Echad Shait of Russia. One of them was mentally incapacitated, but also was a real Russia. How do those two things go together is a good question. Maybe Shait doesn't mean he was actually not in control of himself, because how could he be labeled a Russia? But whatever, bad kid. There's another incident over there by Eliyahu HaNavi, where there's a person that never learned. And he never learned Torah, didn't learn Sukkim, and he also didn't learn Torah Shabbat. And the Eliyahu HaNavi describes that one time he was standing with him in Shul. Given she gets Kedusha's shame, when they got to the Kedusha, he screamed out the answer to Kedusha. I said to him, why are you screaming the Kedusha? You're not saying it in a typical fashion like everyone else. So he said to me, he says, I don't know if that I never learned Torah Shabbat or Torah Shabbat. Now that I have permission to do something and to say something to connect to the Ribbono Shel Olam, this is what I do so that I feel better. I scream out the Kedusha because that's what I know how to do. Didn't take a few years, didn't take long. Until he was able to leave Babel and go to Eretz Yisrael. Ended up appointing him to a political position. And he appointed him over all kinds of responsibilities in Eretz Yisrael. And they built him a big house, and he's able to live there for the rest of his life. And he even got very rich and was able to leave over the money by Yerusha to his children, Asuf Kladeris, until the final generation. So when it comes time to discipline, you should definitely not hit a child hard. Rashi explains that you should use a shoelace to whip him with. Because you shouldn't ever hurt a child. It should just be a message, but it shouldn't be something that that damages chas v'shalom or really, really hurts. So the purpose of this patch is that they should have fear. It should never ever be coming from a place of an enemy or of cruelty. So this is super important. And what Reb Chaim is saying is that never ever should a patch or any discipline come from a place of anger. This is not pashut. It's not pashut at all. It's something that everybody needs to work on, because we all get angry from time to time. And that when we get angry, we end up lashing out in one way or another at our children. And it does not teach the children the proper lesson. It just teaches the children that it's okay to be angry. So it's something we all need to work on. And that when we discipline our children, it should always be at a time that we are not angry. So if we're angry, we actually should push off the discipline. So any patch should never be with anything that could really hurt. It should just be with something small. The Tzvarim say you should never hit your child at a time when you're angry, because there will be no benefit from it. The child just learns anger. Anger is okay. Only when he calms down should he then decide what the proper discipline is, whatever is necessary. A person should teach himself not to get angry. Even if it's something that really is appropriate to be angry about, but a person should never experience anger. Halavai, we should all have such a zuchus to achieve such a madrega that we express anger when necessary, but we never feel angry. If a person actually feels that he needs to actually express himself in an angry fashion, in a way that expresses a certain type of discipline, but is not coming from a feeling of anger. Well, Tzibur, you know, partnership. Let's say the person is in charge of people in one way or another, and he needs to express himself in a way that's harsh. Because that was necessary in that particular situation. He should express it in that way in order to create the musar, the tension. But in his mind, he's totally calm. He's not actually angry. He's just pretending that he's angry, so to speak. He's not actually angry. So that's the language of the Rama. From the most fundamental issues that are problems, is a Rebbe who is not shalem in his midos, and he ends up teaching the children that it's okay to get angry and all these kinds of things. That when you have a machanech, an educator who is not shalem in his midos, so what's lost is double as bad. And kashem yasas talmido bevitu egam bevitu egas. That when a person is expressing himself to give mussar, but it comes out in a way that's like screaming and angry and all of these things, so what's mixed in with the good message that is there is a lot of bad as well. That even if the desired objective is achieved, and the Talmud is aware of what he did wrong, and he even says he's not going to do it again, so there's going to be negative consequences as well. Because he's going to get accustomed to all of this anger and the way that the Rebbe expressed himself. He used these terrible midos at a time that he was giving Moser. And we always learn more from our experiences than we do from the book and just from what we learn. But Talmud, and the Talmud is always paying attention to everything that the Rebbe does. So in other words, the lesson that is learned from the Rebbe's behavior is towards the student, even in Moser. is much greater than any lessons learned from the book. And therefore, if you have a Rebbe that's disciplining with bad midos, so the Talmud learns the bad midos. It's also important to realize that, let's say that you have a child that's doing something negative and you want the child to stop. So often expressions of anger and all these kinds of things will stop the child from doing it. So you accomplished your goal in an immediate sense, but it's very detrimental to the goal in the long term, because then the child also learns that that's an okay way to do it and gets used to it and all these kinds of things that he's saying right now. So even if, you know, it's like terrorism, right? Terrorism works right now, but it creates a lot of problems for the future. The Al-Hari, bullying. Bullying works. Bullying gets what you want now, but it has disastrous consequences for the future. But Al-Hari, most of the time, Gama Techecha, and a lot of times if a child is screamed at and is hit or whatever the case may be, it's coming from a place of anger, so then the child doesn't even get the message at all, because he understands it's coming from a place where it's just a selfishness on the part of the Rebbe, or the Rebbe's out of control or whatever. And so, you know, he may stop doing it on the spot, but he didn't get any message whatsoever out of it. And the longer that a student is in such a situation, he's just gaining terrible midos from his educator, who deals with this at length. That people learn more bad than they learn, you know, good things by watching other people. Also says something that you could learn what the Chazon Eish is saying as well. He also retired from a kakashi, he retired from a sitting, and he was bothered. What is the difference between what's happening before the Omer, before the Shtei Alechem? Because when in the Beis HaMikdash, when they would bring the Korban HaOmer, so it's Matir, all of the Chadash becomes Yashan, and the Shtei Alechem is also Matir, all of the wheat, so the barley and the wheat. Amar Lefan of Yehuda ben Nechemeh, all the Halon Negev of Yehuda, Masha Hintana, Loi, Yimer Ma'arta, Koyinim Lo'omer, Shekin Loi, Yehuda Mechalala, Etzel Hedyoit, Temer Koyinim, Shtei Alechem, Shehuda Mechalala, Etzel Hedyoit. That, again, let's see how he explains this. Ritarfin was raised the following question: what's the difference between the mincha that's brought before the Omer and one brought before the Shtei Halechem? Rabbi Yehuda said, no, if you say that a mincha offering that is brought before the Omer is invalid, that's because the new grain was not mutter yet in terms of anybody. Before the Omer is brought, no one's allowed to eat any of the chadash grain. You say the same for a mincha offering that's brought before the Shtei Halechem, where the new grain was already released with regard to the common person. So in other words, if you have a korban in the Beis HaMikdash, so you had to be matir the barley and you had to be matir the wheat. So before the Omer, which was barley, so nobody was allowed to eat from the new crop. So if you're going to bring a korban from a new crop in the Beis HaMikdash before the Omer, so it's obviously a big no-no, it's unacceptable, because nobody's allowed to eat it, not even a regular person. But after the Omer, so everybody's allowed to eat from all of the new grains, the barley, the wheat, whatever it's going to be. But in Beis HaMikdash, it's still Aser until the Shtei Halechem of Shavuos, right? You know, 49 days later, 48 days later. So that wasn't mutter until the Shtei Halechem. So if a person brought an Omer from wheat before the Shtei Halechem, so how, you know, is that the same thing as before the Omer is brought? It's different because it's only Aser in Beis HaMikdash, with the mutter outside Beis HaMikdash. Shasak Rabbi Tarfon. Rizarfon, you know, was quiet. So upon of Rabbi Yehuda ben Nechemya, and Rabbi Yehuda ben Nechemya's face became like all yellow. What does it mean? I mean, he became like radiant, like he was proud of himself that he had bested Rabbi Tarfon. Amar Rabbi Lo Rabbi Akiva. So Rabbi Akiva said to Yehuda, so upon of Shavu Zakein. Why you're so proud of yourself that you had what to say? You were able to respond to the elder. Tamheini im tarich yamim, would be astonished if you live long. Amar Yehuda b'Rabbi Yilai, Pesach Pesach Haya, it was Erev Pesach, Kishe Alisi, the Atzeres, And when I came up for Shavuos, Shalti Achar asked about Yehuda. Yehuda ben Nechemya Eichan, who, where is he? Ramili is said to Niftar Wahalach Leidayt. It sounds to the Gemara like Rabbi Tarfon wasn't makben, he didn't care, so let Yehuda best him. You know, his other Abba, Mistama Samach, Shabasha le Kushiyasi, he was probably happy because he corrected him, he showed him what was the correct mahalach over here. Only Rabbi Akiva had a sense that Yehuda was proud of himself, and killed, and he cursed him, Shalyachim, they shouldn't have long days. So, you know, you should wonder about this. My kule hai shmegil and misa b'shul zeh. Why did he deserve death for what he did? And kol yisrael yafsidu talmid chacham because that all of klal yisrael should lose such an incredible talmid chacham. Hai lalechichoy. Why didn't he just give him musar? Well, hazir shul yasakein. Don't be so proud of yourself. Why didn't you just give him musar? Yishlam the adi rabba. You can learn. You should learn the opposite. B'shvil shehai atanu v'adam gadol b'fada yem minhagi adir. And when Rabbi Akiva sensed that this person was going to become a gadol b'Yisrael, and he had such a terrible midah, that he got honor, him, he honored himself with the mistake of his Rebbe, who midas kasha lakor, midas are very difficult to uproot. He was concerned, Rabbi Akiva was concerned, that this midah would be passed on to his thousands of talmidim, and it would be an incredibly stumbling block for all the future generations. L'chein, Yoyser Noyach, it's better sheyamus, that he should die. Will Yavir Midos Rosal, Talmidim not pass on terrible Midos to his Talmidim. V'kanizkar le'el, v'divir Ramaran, like we were saying before, in the name of the Chazon Ish. Yehine chelek gadol me'achinuch, v'anhagas ahirim b'bayis. A very important part of chinuch is how parents behave at home. V'kasru asfarim shezeu she'amru, yim'ein imay shava le'aviv bakol. And when it comes to Mansar and Moira, they have to have the same voice. What do you mean the same voice? What husband and wife have the same voice? In an Asman Sar and Moira can't become a Ben Sar and Moira. Shazer Remez, it's a hint to the different, to the idea they have the same voice, meaning, that if they're not equal, they're not on the same page, then the child can't be held responsible for what he does. One says right, one says left. And the child sees that the parents are fighting, they don't get along. And he won't be killed for becoming a Ansar Mera. It's not his fault, it's his parents' fault for not being on the same page in the way that they deal with him and discipline him. And with each other, that they just should be on the same page and respect each other and whatnot. And with Derek Klau, Bayesh is such a Zahirin Shamba Mitzvah. If there's a home where the parents are performing mitzvahs and they're afraid of averis and stumbling blocks and religious stumbling blocks, the father is learning constantly, not just like in between TV shows, he's constantly learning. That has an automatic influence on the children, because most children follow in the footsteps of their parents. And generally, most of the time, you will have good children coming from such a home. But if that's not the way the home is, he's just repeating what he sees at home from his parents, and he's not held fully responsible because that was just the way they was educated and instilled within him before he was able to even really think about it. And here's also interesting that parents that convince their children that they are incredibly capable and really the best kids and the best at learning, the smartest, the brightest, the best kids in the whole school, not in Midos, maybe even in Midos, but certainly in all of the ways. Even if it's true. And even though their kavan is beneficial, trying to do the right thing for the kids, because they want to encourage their learning. Nonetheless, what they're gaining, they're losing. No, you lose more than you gain. Because what they make out of the children is arrogance and bad midos. They end up, you know, looking down on their friends and saying things because they're the smartest and they're the brightest and they're the best. They put down their friends with Sifan Shius, everyone's going to hate them. When these children later on grow up and they go to a yeshiva when they're older, and it turns out that there are better, smarter, brighter than them. So they won't, never, not everyone's looking up to them as the geniuses in this new school. So then they become broken. And everybody sees that. And then they stop learning. And they end up, going out of their minds. And then they have worse problems. The parents have worse problems on their hands now than they ever did before. And it's better to teach the children that you try your hardest, not that you're so smart and you're the brightest and you're the best. But mayhem again. We have a situation where no one ever said anything to them. All of a sudden, the Rebbe disciplines them or says something or disagrees or whatever. So they get all upset. How could the Rebbe say that to me? And if the parents don't have any intelligence, yeah, you're right. I can't believe your Rebbe said that. Even if it was correct, you're not allowed to tell a child that. She's a married me menu call the rabbi, because then he loses all respect for authority. You won't be able to listen to his teacher, certainly that one anymore. Then maybe that becomes a big disaster. And these things happen every day. If the parents have any intelligence, they'll be careful the way they respond. Should give help from heaven that everyone should be able to educate their children properly. And this fundamentally the way you do this primarily is by asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for mercy on their children. And again, in Tanit Yo, there was a certain kohen who did have Yiras Shamayim. And everything he did that was good, he did without publicizing it. He had 10 children from one wife. Six of them were male and four female. He davened with an intensity. None of them should do an avera chas v'shalom or do anything that inappropriate, that immodest, immoral. She didn't take too many years. Ezra, until Ezra came along, and brought all of Klal Yisrael back to rebuild the second base of Mikdash, but from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, and that coin went along with them to Eretz Yisrael, to the base of Mikdash. He didn't die until he saw Kohanim Gedolim come from him, and that his grandchildren became the little Kohanim. For 50 years. And then he died after being able to have all that nachas. Trust in Hashem and do good. Trust HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Everyone should daven every single day, specifically that the Torah should not leave his mouth, umizare and his children's mouths, vizerizare and his grandchildren's mouths. And all of those that come from him should serve a Kadosh Baruch Hu be'emes. There should never be any blemishes or problems in his descendants. That's what the Mishnah Berurah says. The prayers of parents are more acceptable to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which causes b'svarnoi, b'nei yeshiva leiv shalim, because it's with a full heart. Ayin sham. And my father, the stipler, Hayamiyayas, Lilmoid, Im Yuladim, Miguel Sheva, Musar, used to tell people from the time that a boy is 7, you should learn Musar with him. Filo Chamish Dakas, believe it's only 5 minutes a day. Kadesha Yedu Olam, in a Hefker, so that he'll know that the world is not Hefker, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world. People don't live forever. There is reward and there is punishment. There's Gan Eden and there's Gehenim. You should learn a Sefer for them that they can understand as well. Like the Sefer called Orcha Sadikim, like God, and things like that. And you'll see a great benefit from this. They will have Yira Shamayim. Yeah, called Tevez. Everything will be good with God's help. So, a lot of stories here. So, anyway, if you want to listen to them, you can listen. Refraining from rebuke, Reb Chaim related to the Chofetz Chaim's daughter, Reb Zax, told his mother a number of stories about her father, illustrating his wisdom in regard to Chinuch. From time to time, when the Chofetz Chaim needed to write an address in Polish, he would ask a certain person to write it for him, as he himself never used that language. One year, the Chofetz Chaim's family went on vacation, Now and then, his daughter would chat with a local girl who taught her how to read and write Polish. The next time the Chofetz Chaim needed someone to write an address, his daughter told him that she could do it for him since she had learned the language while on vacation. At the time, the Chofetz Chaim did not react. However, when the subject of a vacation came up the next year, he said, it's not a good idea to travel to a place where they teach you in the language of the non-Jews. Good behavior influences others. Chaim related, when we arrived in Eretz Yisrael, we had no place to live, so we moved in with someone. A wooden partition divided the space between us. Apparently, our landlord began to admire us so much that for the rest of his life, he would send us money and clothing from time to time. It's impossible to describe how devoted he was to our family. That's what happens when your good behavior influences others. Reb Chaim added something that the Vilna Gaon answered the Dubna Magid, who asked how one can succeed in influencing others. The Gaon offered a parable of a person who pours a goblet of wine with smaller goblets ranged around it. The wine will overflow, spill into the smaller goblet. Similarly, when a person overflowing Yerushalayim, it will exert an influence on others. One of Rechaim's young grandchildren once tore a page in one of his svarim. He told the parents a week later, when he saw them, that had he seen the incident at a time it happened, he would have given the child a patch to educate him, and the boy would have understood why he had received it. Should he patch him now, however, the child would not understand why he was being punished. Therefore, there was no purpose in doing so, and it was forbidden. So, you know, that's a little bit tricky, because if you're supposed to not patch when you're angry and patch, you know, later, but then you have this problem also that it doesn't, it's not going to mean anything. There's no connection between the action and the punishment. So that gets tricky. Ruchaim told a man that he was raising his children improperly. The man argued they were his children and he had the right to raise them as he wished. Ruchaim said forcefully, they are not your children. They are HaKadosh Baruch Hu's children. He repeated this a few times. Hashem only entrusted them to you. He added, imagine that they were your neighbor's children. Would you still feel they should be treated that way? Ruchaim was asked what to say to a child who asks questions about Hashem's existence, such as, who created Hashem? He suggested responding, there is an answer to that, but there are some things that only grown-ups can understand. Ruchaim said that he would learn a parak of Mishnayos with his sons every day, and then test them on the material. There were those who learned two parakim a day, as their grasp was quicker, and paid closer attention. But then, therefore, he managed to learn the entire Mishnayos twice when they were children. He added, it's very worthwhile to learn with young children because they absorb quickly and well, and it will stay with them. The reason they absorb well is because they have no questions. For them, Zerayim, Kudgim, and Taurus are all the same. To fathers who come to him for advice and blessing, Rechaim stresses, learn with your son, and then he will grow up to be a Talmud Chacham. A father came to Rechaim to ask if it was appropriate to learn Mishnayos with his son, who was 5 and a half. He was already learning Chumash with him. Should he first finish Tanakh and then begin Mishnayos? I learned both of them. Rechaim said, first finish Tanakh and then start Mishnayos. He was referring only to Nevi'im Rishonim, which he was being taught as a child, not all of Tanakh. One Malami told Rechaim that he had a free hour in the evenings and was thinking of using it to earn money as a handyman. Rechaim told him to teach students instead. But I'd make more money the other way, the Malamed protested. But this way has a greater reward, Rechaim responded. Rechaim also told him to learn with his own children. The man said that he had hired a tutor for each child. Nevertheless, Rechaim maintained, it's a mitzvah for a father to learn with his children. He must learn with them apart from the tutors that you hired for them. A man and his child once came to see Rechaim. Rechaim asked the father whether his son knew the material that he had learned with him. Yes, the man said. Rechaim said, it's a mitzvah daraisa to teach your children. He went on to relate that his own father had learned all of the Tanakh and Mishnayos with him, as well as about 8 tractates of Gemara. The stifler continued to learn with Rechaim up until his death, as he believed that a man must fulfill the mitzvah of Vishinantam Levanacha as long as he lives. After praising the child, Rechaim said that he deserved a prize. The prize that he received was a grade of excellent. Rechaim blessed the child to know all of Shas well. When a man who was present in the room asked for the same bracha for himself, Rechaim told him, if you have the will, you will have the knowledge. No bracha will help you. And he refused to give such a bracha, even though the man importuned him several times, simply repeating what he had said. So why did Rabbeinu give the child a bracha, the man asked. After all, if he wants, he will learn too. Rechaim replied, a child can know his learning, even if he does not have the will to learn, because he attends the Talmud Torah and learns at home. For an adult, however, it all depends on his will. Interesting. Rechaim said that a father should speak with his son's Rebbe from time to time to ascertain how he's progressing. It's not good if he shows no interest. He related that a Malamed once told him, if a father doesn't care about his son, then neither do I. Several times with regard to a boy who has no desire to learn, Rechaim has recommended giving him a student to teach, to whom he must explain the material thoroughly. Thus, he will feel obligated to learn and explain it well, especially if he's paid. This has been tried and tested. Rabbi Shiva Mashgiach sought advice from a Leo man who is close to Rechaim. He wanted to visit Reb Chaim to ask for his forgiveness for denigrating him to his students. His 8-year-old son had fallen dangerously ill, and he was afraid that it was because of his improper remark. He wished to appease Reb Chaim, but was ashamed to go himself. He asked Reb Man to go to Reb Chaim and tell him what had happened. Reb Leo Man replied that he could not say such things to Reb Chaim. Rather, he suggested that the Mashgiach write his story and his request, and he would bring it to Reb Chaim. Mashgiach agreed and began writing down what was in his heart. A long time ago, in order to motivate the Bachrim and the Yeshiva where I serve as Mashgiach, I told them they should learn with great diligence. I told them to take a lesson from Chaim Kanievsky, whose abilities were weak in his youth, and who today is the Gadol Hador. I am now begging forgiveness from Moran for daring to say that he was not a person of ability. When Chaim read the letter, he responded that he disagreed with the conclusion, and that he was now a person of, with the conclusion that he was now a person of great ability. Today he lacked ability as well, and there was nothing to forgive. He added that his father, the stipler, once saw it written that the Chazon Ish, as a young man, lacked ability. In the margin of the page, the stipler wrote, "This is a lie and slander." Reb Chaim said, "Saying that the Chazon Ish lacked ability in his youth is a lie, and this is also a lie, for I am not a person of ability now." After hearing Reb Chaim's reaction, the Mashgiach was still not calm. Reb Chaim had not stated that he forgave him for what he had said. He only said he wasn't a man of ability at all, and therefore the Mashgiach had not insulted him. So there was nothing to forgive. The Mashgiach was despondent that Reb Chaim had not said explicitly that he forgave him. Seeing how upset the Mashgiach was, Reb Eliyahu Mann decided to take the letter to Reb Chaim's Rebbe, the illustrious Gaon Reb Michal Yehuda Lefkowitz. After perusing the letter, Reb Michal Yehuda declared Reb Chaim was a person of great ability even in his youth and was beloved by all. Reb Eliyahu Mann went back to Reb Chaim and told him what Reb Michal Yehuda had said. At once Reb Chaim said, "I forgive him." And with Hashem's help, may this child have a complete recovery. And so it was. Reb Chaim's grandson related, "One day when I came to Rabbeinu's house, he was learning Shulchan Aruch as part of his daily regimen. When he saw me, he flipped through the Shulchan Aruch every day and pointed, 'You see here, it says that one must learn Musar, for it states it's a mitzvah to teach children Mishnah, Gemara, Halachas, and Agadis. Agadis are Musar.' You see it in the Shulchan Aruch explicitly. Often when people ask Rav Chaim questions related to their children's education, he tells them, 'My father used to say that one should learn Musar with the children from the age of 7. Easy things like Orcha Sadiqa, even just 5 minutes a day. Over time, the material will stay with them. I remember how our father would take us for a walk on Shabbos from sunset until the stars came out, when it was dark in the house and in the Beis Medrash, and it was not possible to learn from a sefer. He would tell us stories about tzaddikim to imbue us with Yirat Shamayim. Before the visitor left, Reb Chaim would often add, 'Learning Musar is good for parents, too.'" Someone told Reb Chaim that he had been offered the opportunity to deliver a shir at the time that he regularly learned Musar. It seemed to him that giving the shir took precedence, but he wanted to receive Reb Chaim's approval. This surprised Reb Chaim, replied firmly, "If you feel that you need the Musar, do not accept the shir. Musar is very important." Seeing the man was still undecided, Reb Chaim told him, "You can integrate Musar into the shir. When I learned from Reb Michal Yehuda Lefkowitz in Yeshiva Tiferes Tzion, he would introduce great many Musar concepts. It was really gishmak." He said the same thing to members of a B'nai Brak evening kollel, who wished to introduce a Musar Seder into their schedule. The Rish Kollel was against the idea, claiming that it constituted theft. "Why is he against it?" Reb Chaim asked. Does he understand the importance of learning Musar, but simply does not want to interfere with the donor's perspective on which the kollel was founded? However, it's because he objects to Musar. A trustee has no right to such nonsense. After all, the Mishnah Berurah writes that one must learn Musar every day. And the Shaar Tzion there writes that this is an obligation greater than Mishnayos. Reb Chaim related that a man came to him who had for many years caused others to eat non-kosher meat. He was shattered and broken. I told him that nothing stands in the way of tshuva. He sighed and said, "It states that one who causes others to sin is not successful in doing tshuva. Nevertheless, Reb Chaim said, if one tries, one can do it. Start learning a lot of Musar, and a Kodesh Baruch Hu will help you to succeed in doing tshuva." To a younger man who discussed learning Musar, Reb Chaim said that the stipler would learn Musar every night if he didn't want people to know. He told me that back in Navarduk, he understood not to let a day pass without Musar, except for 2 days, Purim and Simchas Torah. Apparently, he was reluctant to undertake something that there was a chance he might not be able to keep. I also saw the Chazon Ish holding the Sefer Shari Tshuva, and it wasn't during Yom Ha'aron. Reb Chaim's son related that when they were children, their father would ask them the names of the Tanoim and Amoraim at the Shabbos table. For example, the names of the Tanoim, they begin with the letter Aleph, and everyone would say what he remembered. In such a fashion, he would ask them questions on Tanakh, such as who rode on a donkey, on a horse, on an eagle, on a mule, and so on. I received this list from one of Reb Chaim's grandsons, a list of Torah riddles that his grandfather asked during Shabbos Seudos. Although in time, some observations have been made about various items on the list, since it's a matter of halacha, not a matter of halacha, but only of Torah riddles that Reb Chaim used to entertain his grandchildren, we have left it unchanged. The smallest word in terms of gematria. The name of an Amora from the Yerushalmi, Rav Ba, followed by Rabbi Abba. The word with the most letters in Megillas Esther, Vahaachashtar Panim, 11 letters. The verse in Tanakh with the fewest words, Adam, Shes, Enosh, the first verse in Divrei HaYomim. The shortest Mishnah in Bavli, Nazir 5a, Stam Nazir Shlishim Yoim, followed by Pesachim 119b, followed by Bava Kamma 17b. The longest Mishnah in Bavli, Zevachim 112a, which is comprised of 439 words, followed by Sanhedrin 2a at 381. The shortest Perek in Tehillim, Perek 117. The longest Perek in Tehillim, Perek Kuf Yudes. The shortest Navi, Ovadia, 21 Psukim. The shortest Perek in Mishnah, Perek Hechelu, Tamid. The longest Perek in Mishnah, Kelim, Perek 17, with 17 Mishnayos, followed by Oyelay's Perek 9, with 16 Mishnayos. The shortest Perek in Gemara, Shabbos, Perek Chaf Aleph. The longest Perek in Gemara, Kiddushin, Aisha nicknames. The Perek in Bavli that has no Tosfos, the last Perek in Sanhedrin, Perek Chilek. The shortest page in Shas, Bava Kamma 77a. The page with only Tosfos, Nazir 33b. The shortest tractate in Mishnah, Kinem, with 7 short pages. The longest tractate in Mishnah, Kalim, with 30 prakim. The longest tractate in Bavli, Bava Basra, followed by Shabbos. According to the Gra, it is Brachis, based on the number of words. And those who say that the Gra did not say this, but in reality, Masechet Shabbos is longer. The shortest tractate, Yerushalmi, Makkos. Longest tractate, Yerushalmi, Brachis. The shortest Seder in the Mishnah is Zroim. The longest Seder in the Mishnah is Taris. The number of tractates in Bavli is 36. The number of tractates in Yerushalmi is 39. The longest verse in Megillas Esther is Perek Ches Pasuk Tes, followed by Perek Gimel Pasuk Yudas. The shortest word in Tanakh, the Hey, at the start of Parshas Hazinu, where a woman disagrees with a Tana, Si Tosefta Kelim 4:9. And the longest Tosfos is Bava Kamma 107a. So now you have all of the interesting trivia to ask your children at the Shabbos table. Have a beautiful day.